Welcome to the Happy Mindset Show, the show that brings you insights, realizations, and lessons learned in order to help you to live a life you love. Today's episode is episode number 20, and today's title is to go to bed a little wiser. So today I'm joined by Peyton Holland. So Peyton is a passionate and motivated professional with a background in education, industry, and community. He has dedicated his career to helping to bring these groups together so that we can help the schools and colleges prepare the leaders for the future. Peyton also has an inspirational TEDx talk called Skills to Pay the Bills and Redefine Success. So I'd recommend you to give that a watch if you have the time. So thanks for joining us today, Peyton.
Thanks, Dennis. Appreciate you having me on.
No worries. I guess my first question is, when did you start realizing there was a gap between the skills for the real world and the education system? And more importantly, how did you go about thinking about a solution to that problem?
Yeah, I guess it started dawning on me when I was in high school. I actually took a masonry class while I was in high school, and I just took it because I wanted to learn how to build things. I'd grown up with a father that was incredibly talented. I mean, the man could fix anything. He could do anything. He taught himself he built his own house. He could work on any engine. And so I wanted to take some classes to be like him. And through the course of that, I got involved in an organization called Skills USA, which brings students from every trade area you could think of together, the construction trades, the technical computer programming trades, cosmetology, aviation, you name it. And what I realized is there was a huge group of students that were engaged in the skilled and technical trades that were passionate about it, that loved it. But when I would go back to my home school, 95 to 99% of the conversation that was had with students on that campus was, what are you going to do to get into a four-year university? And as I started looking at that and then having conversations with my dad, who was running a logging business at the time, trying to find workers that were skilled enough to run the equipment, who knew how to fix the equipment, the cost and availability of diesel technicians, it was getting pretty short. And so at an early age, I started to understand that we don't have enough people going into these trade areas in order to meet the demand that we have in this country for the technical skills. And it just came but more and more evident as I went to a four-year university myself. I wanted to get engaged in education and help change this conversation and process. And when I got to a four-year university, it really hit me as I started having a conversation with some of my colleagues there that they didn't know why they were at the four-year university. They were there because that's what they thought they were supposed to do, and they had no direction. And so they end up taking some general coursework that sends them out without any skills. And then the next thing you know, we've got a country that's overpopulated with four-year degrees, but no skills to back it up. And that's when I really realized the importance of that organization. I was engaged in Skills USA and trying to help students match passions and desires and technical aptitudes with a skill set that's going to get a chance to showcase that, and then partner that with a career that they love. So now in answer to the part of what are we trying to do to close that, I run Skills USA for the state of North Carolina, and we work with high schools and community colleges and universities across North Carolina to help students find an interest in the skilled and technical trades. Not only that, to give them competitive event opportunities that put them in front of business and industry. It's like the best job interview industry could ask for, because these students are repairing a car right in front of them. They get to see what the student's capable of. And they're at the end of the day, the students get some incredible prizes. They get job offers. And we also complement that, not just with that extra technical training, but one of the biggest gaps, we talk about skills gaps. There's a technical skill gap that exists here. There's also an employability skills gap, the ability to communicate and have a face-to-face conversation, the ability to work in teams, the ability to think critically and show work ethic. That's become a huge issue in our country. And as Skills USA, we provide opportunities for students to develop those skill sets and resources for our instructors to help teach and build those too. So we're trying to attack it from all angles and just help folks understand that we've got to have the technical skills in this country. And if you pick on here now and you need a repairman to come out, maybe your plumbing's having some issues, you need an electrician, you want to get a home built, you're going to be put on a waiting list because there's such high demand for those trades and such short supply for those workers now.
So like if I'm somebody who's interested in learning computer programming, mm-hmm. what's the advantage of coming to Skills USA over doing a four-year degree in computer science?
Yeah, so Skills USA, the unique thing about Skills USA is you can participate with us whether you're at a high school, we're actually in middle schools now, a community college, or a four-year university. So no matter where you're at in that process, we can engage with you and get you connected with business and industry. One of the things I would say about computer programming is, you know, a lot of folks sink a tremendous amount of money into a four-year education when they could go to a technical school, which would be a two-year education, which is oftentimes a quarter or less the cost of a four-year university, and get the very specific technical skill sets they need to go right into industry. And they come out making as much, if not more money than someone who went the four-year university route. So my conversation on that would be, how do you get the most return on investment for what you want to do in life? Do you have an idea of what you're passionate about in a career? And if you do, let's look at those options, because there are programming opportunities where a computer programmer may need to go through a four-year university, depending on what very specific job you want or what language or what level. But there's a ton of opportunities just going to a two-year technical school here in our community college system. A great example, even less than that, in Mississippi, I was just out there about a month ago. They have an 11-month coding academy. A student can go into that right out of high school. It costs $0, absolutely free. And in 11 months, they get all of the training they need in that coding academy to go out and start working for major corporations. I'm talking to IBMs of the world, you name it, starting out at $50,000 a year. So a student can be between 18 and 19 years old, go to a free 11-month training program and come out making $50,000 a year and just move up from that. And at that point, the company is going to pay for any further training. Like that's the type of return on investment and opportunity conversation we need to start having, because companies are realizing we've said, hey, this degree on the wall has value, but we forgot about the skills that degree is supposed to represent. So now we're having that conversation where companies are starting to value over paper hanging on the wall, and that's what's getting students jobs. That's what's giving them a career.
I think you actually mentioned before that we were forgetting about who actually built the wall as well, the skills yeah. that actually building the wall, which I thought was quite cool.
Yeah, would you rather be proud of a piece of paper hanging on a wall that someone else built for you, or build your own wall? Like that's, you know, my dad, he's the kind of man that if he doesn't have a tool before he goes out and buys a tool, the man's going to try to make the tool. That's what he does. And 9 times out of 10, he makes a better tool than whatever he could have went out and bought. And I think we've lost that mentality largely in the world in general, is that innovative spark tip. Man, let's see if I can do this myself, as opposed to relying on someone else to do that. So.
Yeah, because you mentioned, like, why is it important to know why and how something works?
Why and how something works. You know, my dad, he was never, there's a lot of people, myself included, that are guilty when we open up something. We pull that instruction sheet out, and the first thing we say is, you know what, I really don't need that. And then about 10 minutes later, you hear cardboard rustling, and we're trying to find that ever so valuable piece of paper. How do we put this together? And my dad, he never wanted to look at the instructions. And the reason was he wanted to take the time to put every piece together, see how it fits, see how it worked, so that if something ever broke, he knew how to pull it apart and fix it. He knew the reason that piece A fit together with piece B. He knew the reason this motor pulled this pulley that turned this part on the engine. And as a result of that, it gave him the ability to assess whatever issue or whatever he was working with differently. Also gave him the ability to create and innovate, because now he had a deeper understanding. You know, I related a lot to calculator usage. I don't know about you, but when I was going through middle school and elementary school at the youngest age, everything we did was longhand. You know, we never had a calculator. But by the time I got to high school, technology had advanced so much. Just a $100 calculator could perform incredible functions and equations. So as we got into advanced math classes, all we were doing was using a calculator. And now today, if my wife's parents and she run a retail business, and when they hire high school students, the high school students have incredible difficulty just doing the simple math of counting change back. No one ever really took the time to teach them how and why numbers work, because they could pick up a calculator and type it in and get the answer. As a result of that, they're handicapped in a situation where technology might not be available. They don't understand the principles that guide the practice. And I think that's what it comes down to. When you understand how and why something works, it gives you an idea behind the principles that drive whatever that is. And if you understand those principles, you've got incredible versatility and capability compared to just saying, hey, you know what? I flipped the light switch and it works. And that's, if I understand the electricity behind it, if I understand how those three wires in that switch box bring that electricity from a massive power source, what reduces it down so that it turns one light on and doesn't explode, well, then I have greater appreciation for not sticking my finger in a light socket, number one. And number two, if something ever happens around my house, I don't have to pay somebody $85 an hour to come change a light socket. I understand the basic principles and can do that myself.
Makes sense. I had the same thought process too when I got into IT, that I was sick of going to the computer repair guy. So I started looking on YouTube, like, what's the basics I can do here to optimize my computer and stuff. And it was really beneficial, because once you start understanding how one thing works, you start finding some principles, it applies to other stuff in life too, in other ways. So the details become less an issue. It's more the actual roots to the details. I think Elon Musk actually talked about that too, like the semantic tree of knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's the actual roots. It's the first principles that are important. And then you can actually, you've got a tree which you can hang the leaves on, which makes sense. Like,
yeah. If you don't build that foundation, then I've seen more than one occasion where a student gets what they think is knowledge on. Oh, I'll use computer maintenance, for example. We have an information technology systems contest, and they'll understand the basic. Okay, if the computer's not turning on, here's a certain process I need to go through to diagnose that. But then once they figure out that the issue is internal and it's got something to do with hardware, they've never studied hardware. All they've ever looked at is software. So they don't know how the hardware makes the software work. Well, they're in a position to not be able to go any further with that, because they didn't understand the basic principles of what that machine that's allowing that software to run. They didn't understand the basic principles that made that machine operate. So,
That's it. I think it starts small, even with the hardware. It's like, I think the first thing I ever did was like replace the RAM on my computer. I thought it was a big deal, like, because I pay people for that. And I was like, that must be really difficult. But then I started realizing that there's a little bit of information you need to know. All right, you need to get the right RAM in there, maybe the right model. But it was a lot, it demystifies the magic. Because up until that, I thought it was like a magic machine, a magic box that I'd never understand.
It's like the Wizard of Oz. You finally get to look behind the curtain and see what's going on back there.
Yeah, that's it. Another equation you actually had was imagination plus knowledge plus skill equals creation. Could you expand on that a bit? Because I think imagination is quite important when we mix it with technical skill as well.
Yeah, no, that's one thing that my dad showcased throughout his entire life. And I think the conversation starts with knowledge. That's your base level foundation. Just like what we were talking about there, if you understand how and why something works, that's the base level of knowledge you need. But you can't stop at knowledge if you want to be able to create. You've got to develop some skill sets. I run into this constantly with people who are incredibly book smart. They've read every book they can think of. They understand all the theory and all the principle. But if you only have theory and no one's ever taught you the skill to put that theory into practice, then your ability to take that knowledge and do anything productive with it is severely limited. So if you get that base knowledge about what we were just talking about understanding how and why something works, and you get the skills to learn how to manipulate whatever that how and why is in a way that can be productive and creative, then it frees up your mind to start thinking about, well, okay, if this can do this, then what's the other possibilities for what I can do with this? Just if we want to stay on the theme of technology, just think about how in the conversation of RAM, like how little RAM it took to run such a massive machine, and then how much we're able to do in such a small confines of a cell phone, or I don't know that RAM's in a cell phone. I was a masonry student, not a technology person, so forgive me for my ignorance. minutes on that. But, you know, just the computing power alone, that took somebody with knowledge and skill saying, okay, I know it can do this, this, and this. What happens if I can use this concept from this field and bring it here to make it do this? And that's where the imagination kicks in. Without that imagination, we just stay stagnant. You know, my dad, he would walk out to a pile of scrap parts and he knows he wants to create something that can turn bowls. I mean, I've got an example right here. It might even be too big for, it's bigger than my head, but he wanted to create something like this. And he didn't have a turning lathe to do that with. And most people, when they want to create a bowl like this, you'll put one blank of wood on a turning lathe and it'll be this big square. And when you start turning it, you cut out all this wood in here, all the wood around it, and you've wasted thirds of the material on that. And he didn't want a lathe that would do that. So he walked out. He had an old lawnmower motor, power takeoff drive shaft, and some scrap metal laying around. And he looked at that and thought, okay, I know how a traditional turning lathe works. I know the process for that. So there's the knowledge. I have the skill set to build something that looks like a traditional turning lathe. But what happens if I modify it by putting a series of knives that instead of chiseling away at the outside of the wood first, cuts into the wood and shaves off one layer at a time? And through that process, that was his imagination piece. He used a skill to weld and put the machine together, to get the motor running, all of that. And it produced three bowls out of one blank of wood that you would usually get one bowl out of. So that's an example of where, if he didn't have the knowledge of how a traditional lathe worked, he wouldn't have been able to move forward with that. He had to have the theory. If he didn't have the skill set to weld, to work on that lawnmower motor, and to know how basic woodworking works, the force that's put on a piece of wood when it's turning into a knife, he wouldn't have been able to create the machine. But it was his imagination that helped him get from the point of, how can this lawnmower motor make this? And I don't think most people would think a lawnmower motor could result in this.
Yeah, that's pretty powerful. And it was like zero cost as well if they're just lying around as well.
Yeah, so he saved a ton of money. I mean, a turning lathe, thousands of dollars if you get a good one. And still, that turning lathe, you're going to spend thousands of dollars and get one third of the production that he's able to get out of it.
Yeah, that's innovation right there, actually.
Yeah.
Another thing that I've recently come across is that thinking in options instead of thinking in problems. I got it from design thinking there recently. Have you come across it before yourself intuitively? I think it's so easy for me to focus on a problem, but when I can get that shift in my mind to think about more about the options that are available, I'm open to seeing things I wouldn't see otherwise. I wonder, has that played out for you in your life as well?
If you don't look at the options, I mean, I think about it in a couple of things, and really it kind of comes back to the equation we were just talking about knowledge, skill, and imagination. That opens up, the more knowledge and the more skill you have, opens up your mind to think about multiple options as opposed to just thinking about the problem. And my dad helped me build my house, and we cut all of the flooring and all of the wood on the walls at his sawmill. We brought it over here, we tongue and grooved it, and we started putting it up on the walls. And I don't know if you've ever put up any lumber before, but lumber has a tendency to bow instead of, you know, we want this perfectly straight piece of wood going on the wall so it makes these nice clean lines. Well, wood naturally, because of the grain in it, sometimes will get a bow in it. And I'm sitting there racking my mind, like, here's our problem. The only thing I know to do is get another piece of wood or just sit there with a hammer and try to knock the heck out of it to drive it down. You know, my dad, back in the old days when you would have the crank up cars, like the Model T's and the Model A's, they would have this crank handle on the front of it. And it had these little grips right on the front of the crank handle that you would put in and you'd turn and it would start the motor. Well, my dad looked at that. He had an old one laying around the house. And then looked at how the wall was going up and saw that if he put a piece of 2x4 or another piece of wood on top of the wood we were trying to straighten out, and he took that crank handle from the Model T and turned down and pressed down on it, it flattened what was a crooked board on the wall straight out, we're able to nail it down and you don't see any gaps or cracks now. Oh. So that's an opportunity where instead of just thinking about the problem, what's the problem? We got a gap. What's the easy fix? Well, we get another board or we just cut that up into small segments. No, he said, no, let's think about some options outside of that. I've got this thing. How can something that's used to start cars be used to fix a wood problem? And that's, to me, that's one of the things I would have never thought about that in a million years.
Yeah.
But knowledgeability and a skill plus his imagination got him there.
How about the application part? I think the application part of knowledge to turn into skill, it requires making mistakes. How do you think about looking at mistakes and stuff?
Yeah, I think mistakes are vital. They're critical. It never feels good when you make them. Anytime you goof, there's always, we always try to look so perfect and do everything so right. And that's why we spend time in front of a mirror. That's why you even have mirrors, because we don't want to look like a mistake, right? So when we make a mistake, it hits us at a different level. But now, I ran for a political office back in my county for county commissioner, and I didn't win. And it was a massive public failure. Everyone that I knew that I didn't win. And that was a lot to take in, because a lot of time you put so much of yourself into wanting to be successful and to wanting to accomplish whatever goal it is that you set out to do. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I could think back to several mistakes that I made during the campaign that might have given me a competitive edge in that. But looking back, man, for a day or two, it hurt. But then I started thinking about how much I was actually able to accomplish in that mistake, how much I grew personally. And I think that's one of the things we got to focus on when we make mistakes, is there's so much growth that comes out of that. But if we focus only on the mistake and the fact that we might have failed at that point in time, we don't give ourselves a chance to grow and learn through that process. That's part of what expands our knowledge. And in some cases, skill is being aware of, you know, hey, that didn't work out. And it really, yeah, that's not feeling real good right now. Why didn't it work out? Okay, I've got that now. What could I have done different? Okay, do I even want to do it again? Maybe that's the ultimate learning that comes out of it. So mistakes and failure are, I know it's cliche to say, but they're some of the most powerful tools if we don't let them wreck us emotionally. It's healthy to be upset. It's healthy to be disappointed. But we got to move past that. If we stay in that zone, then we really lose our ability to reinvent and recreate ourselves.
That's it. I think it gives you that perspective too, when you can learn the lesson and move forward. Like in that example there, was there a particular lesson you learned that helped you to move forward?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing was I realized, even though I didn't get the office, how much I was actually able to accomplish by bringing, there was a large group of people in our county that didn't feel like they'd had their voices heard, that had some concerns that no one else was talking about. And through that campaign, we brought those concerns to light. And now it's funny how it comes full circle. Last night, I just had a task force committee meeting. I was appointed to a task force to address the very concern that we brought up during the campaign. So even though I didn't get put into office to address that, the result has been the message got out. A tremendous amount was accomplished, because now people are aware of something that they didn't know was an issue before. And now the county's taken steps to address that. So what I can take away from that is, wow, yeah, that there was a failure, but there was still success that came out of that opportunity. So I'm very pleased with that. And also very pleased I don't have to go to monthly budget meetings as well.
Yeah, maybe you got all the upsides and none of the downsides. But what stands out there for me is that you actually kept moving forward. I think if you quit, then you would have never realized how that would have played out.
Yeah.
Important thing there.
Yeah, and it's about building relationships too, because in that example, my opponent is actually one of the ones who appointed me to the commission. Ah. So one thing I'll say to that point is, if you ever get into a point of failure, or maybe there's even a teacher that pushes you really, really hard. I'm sure we've all had that one educator that it was impossible to get an A in their class just because they had such high standards and they pushed their students so hard. And a lot of time that builds discontent, because in our minds, we want to be successful. But at the end of the day, when you look at the knowledge and ability and skill that comes out of that teacher who has pushed those students that extra level, who was grading really hard, a lot of times the knowledge and skill that you gained in that class allow you to be more successful than the classes where you got all A's in, because you just cruised through it. You didn't take the time to understand how and why you were getting that bad grade. So I think that's just a critically important perspective to go through, to not be afraid to be pushed and challenged or even defeated, because if we own that moment and recognize it, we can do something really powerful and productive with it.
And come back to education again, are the narratives, like social narratives, how do you see them having an influence on the paths we pursue in our education and in our careers as well?
Yeah. So the social narrative that exists here in the United States, and I studied in France. I worked on my master's degree in Aix-en-Provence, which I know you did as well. The narrative there really seems to be that there's one path to success, and that one path to success goes through a four-year university, that it requires a four-year degree. And when I look at society in general, I just think about what I watch on television. When you see a plumber on television, they're not portrayed as someone who's doing really well in life. They're not portrayed with someone who's able to not only meet the basic needs of life, but live in a really nice house to have wealth and success. They're portrayed as the guy who comes in who can't keep his pants up when he bends down to fix the pipes under the sink. Mm-hmm. And so there's this social image of the skilled and technical trades that even it's subliminal. We watch it in the evening times. We see it on the morning cartoons, whatever it may be. There's a social image that those jobs, those skills that go with those jobs are lesser than those skills that come with a four-year degree and a suit and tie. And I think that social narrative has almost destroyed our educational process here in our country, in the U.S. anyway, because everyone is going through that process. Some statistics I just heard the other day, out of a graduating class, about 20% of them are the high performers that are going to go on and actually stick with a four-year university. There's about 20% that are struggling, that need assistance and need help, and are going to be taking care of that pathway. But you've got the 60% in the middle that are not destined for a four-year university. They're not getting that extra assistance. They're being told the four-year university is the only route for them, but that's not what they want to do. That's not what their skills and aptitudes fit. And so they're being funneled into a pipeline that eventually is going to result in them having to go back to get the technical training they need to start with. I mean, we just had this past May, or it's May now, we had 1.9 million students graduate from a four-year university. The statistics show us that about 49% of them are going to end up working in a job that doesn't require the degree they received. And about a third of that 49% is going to be working in a job that doesn't require a degree at all, barely requires a high school diploma. So we've got 1.9 million students, half of whom just spent 4 years or more. The average time in a university now is stretching to 5 and 6 years. Mm. Coming out with an average student loan debt of $37,000 for a degree that they're not able to use and probably won't use. Right now in our community college system, there's a huge influx of folks with four-year degrees coming back into the community colleges and technical schools because they realized they got a degree from a college, but they didn't get any skills that went with that degree that are in demand in the workplace. So that social narrative has resulted in increased student debt load here in this country. It's delaying people's lives because they're spending 4 years getting an education that doesn't fit their desires. You know, when I gave that TEDx talk, it was really interesting. There was a mother that came up to me after the conversation, and the audience was full of people with master's degrees and bachelor's degrees and PhDs. I thought tomatoes were going to get thrown at me by the time I was halfway through, saying, no, you don't need a four-year degree. but this mother came up to me and she said, thank you. I said, well, what for? She said, I'm taking my son on college tours tomorrow. And she named off four of the most prestigious universities in North Carolina that she was going to take her son to. She said, but that's my dream for him. He's always loved building with his hands. He's enjoyed playing with his Erector sets and working the electrical issues out with those Erector sets so that they could perform whatever task he wanted to do. He's loved doing that his entire life. And she said, I'm trying to make him go get a degree that doesn't give him a chance to do what he enjoys. She said she was adding two community colleges to that college tour the next day, which was really exciting to me. Someone finally understood that it's not about the degree. It's not about the name of the school on that piece of paper that's hanging on a wall someone else built for you. It's about the skills that you walk out of whatever educational institution that is that you can then apply to the workforce. Because, I mean, what's the point of a four-year university? Why do we go to school? What is the point of that? Well, it's to gain knowledge. That's one thing. And in a Greek philosopher's world, we would just get knowledge and we'd sit around at the spa and we'd talk about all the things we knew, right? That's but in today's world where we have to make money, where we have to provide for our families, where we have to find a way to sustain ourselves in life, we can't just rely on knowledge alone. We've got to get that skill, a practical skill, a skill that can be used, a skill that's in demand. And I think that's the social narrative that's not getting out there. It's about paper. It's not about skill.
And how does somebody when they listen to this and they're kind of thinking, how do I navigate the world? Because the social narratives can, because they're subliminal, they're very hard to get away from. How do I actually get in touch with what I want out of life and where I want to go in my career? How have you done it yourself? Kind of if you could give an example for people.
Yeah. So when I went to high school and I told them I wanted to take a masonry class, they're like, whoa, you know, if you take this class, it's going to lower your GPA because it's going to prevent you from getting the honors courses, because it's going to throw your schedule off. If you take this class, it's not going to allow you to be valedictorian because other folks are going to be racing ahead. You're not going to get into a good college. And I just, at a young age, I had to sit there and think, what's important to me? I didn't know why I would want to go to college. I didn't know what I wanted to do with the rest of my life at that point in time. But the one thing I did know is that I wanted to know how to do something for myself. If I ever built a home, I wanted to be able to lay brick around my home. I wanted to be able to be self-sufficient. And that was a realization that took a lot of thinking and introspection. But at the end of the day, I took that masonry class, and then I took horticulture, and then I took computer applications because I wanted to sample everything because I didn't know what I wanted to do with the rest of my life. And I think that's the message today. If you've got an opportunity to, maybe it's just one course. Maybe you want to learn more about IT. Talk to Dennis. Give him a call. he can tell you. He can give you a crash course in IT, and you can figure out, you know what? I really enjoy this work, or I really don't enjoy this work. Go pick up a hammer. And if you don't know what to do with that hammer other than breaking a window, then find somebody that knows how to use one skillfully and just try it for a day. I think that's what we've missed out a lot of is just going out and exploring. We've got the mindset. When I was in Europe, I wanted to explore every city and every country I possibly could. When it comes to the idea of travel, people have this mindset, well, I got to see everything I can. They want to go explore the world. But they don't apply that same explore the world mindset to their career opportunities, to all the different trades that exist out there. You know, I would, if you're sitting here trying to make a decision, if anybody in high school is listening to this, go sign up for some technical skill class. Take something that gives you a chance to work with your hands to decide if you even love working with your hands. Take something that gives you a chance to work with numbers, accounting, finance. Decide if that's the bane of your existence or if you really get excited about working with those numbers, right? Take as widespread of options as you can so that you get a chance to figure out what areas you want to go into and then move forward. And if there's parents listening, have conversations with those counselors that are helping your students pick classes and say, I want my student to get a diverse education. I think that's one of the things we've lost. I don't know if you had this experience or not, Dennis, but when I went to a four-year university and they told me about all these prerequisite courses I was going to have to take in my first 2 years, I thought, you know, I don't want to take that course. I would rather take this because this course fits my interest. I'm trying to think of one. It was, we had to take a science course, and I really don't want to take chemistry. I know I'm not good at chemistry. I know I don't enjoy chemistry. I would much rather take paleontology because I love dinosaurs, and I would love to one day go dig up fossils and understand how the earth works in that manner, understand how life got to where it was in that era, and just I don't know, dinosaurs seem really random, but it was an interest. It was something I was interested in that I never got the chance to explore because the university told me what my diverse education should look like. I think we got to get back to a point in this world where a diverse education really means students get a sampling of all trade opportunities, of all areas that they could possibly go into. You know, we're always taking, what are the courses that you would have to take? All that you guarantee this anywhere you go. What are some of the courses that you always have to take in a school, Dennis? What do you think some of them are?
Usually English, math, it'd be a science subject, a language, maybe business. It depends on it's usually the core is like English. In Ireland we've got Irish and we've got maths. And what I have found is that, especially with languages, is that I spend so much time just learning from textbooks and writing to imaginary people that I never really properly learned French in school until I went out and started meeting French people. And that's when I started to understand that language learning is as much about my own psychology as it is about learning the actual words. Because if I've got all the words, but I haven't got the psychological know-how to speak to somebody new and to get over my nerves and that kind of stuff, I'm not going to make that much progress on a consistent basis.
Mm-hmm.
And when I think about it, we're not really taught about psychology. When I was in school, psychology, philosophy, these areas weren't something I was covered. And in hindsight, if I had a better understanding of that, it might have stood to me. I'm not sure how. Maybe I wouldn't have paid attention properly. But I didn't know. But I think psychology, philosophy, they're intangible stuff, but they stand to you in the long run. It's kind of the intangible stuff that add into your skill sets.
No, it makes, and it's something I talk with students a lot about is experiential learning. And that's exactly what it is. You know, we've got all these words. Let's go put it into practice with somebody who's fluent, who's an expert in that language. Mm-hmm. And it's the same with skill sets. Great example at the high school I went to, there was a young lady who decided she was an off chance going to take a carpentry class. Man, she developed such incredible skills in that. She was the first female to win top five in the state carpentry contest. She developed such a great aptitude because she took the time to be mentored by the instructor in that class, as opposed to just showing up and just going through the motions. She was hungry to learn everything she could about that. Is she a carpenter for a living today? No, she actually ended up going into construction management. She used that to springboard into a construction management program, which then got her interested in finance. So you figure out how a carpenter winds up in a financial career, but dang it, she built a series of experiences that led her to her eventual passion. Would she have wound up in that finance career without having taken that carpentry course? Maybe, but probably not nearly as fast and probably not in as high as a position as she is, because her credibility in working for the company that she started in finance came from her construction background and knowing what she was doing there. So that experiential learning made life real. She understood what it took to manage a job site, the cost associated with that, which made her a heck of a financial manager for that company. And now she's working for one of the larger financial divisions of one of the biggest software firms in the state.
That's actually a really good point. It's I've noticed that recently that if you've got a passion and you've got a skill set and you find a company who's actually working in the industry that you're passionate about, that will stand to your background. Like say, for example, you're interested in dance, and you want to become an accountant for some dance school or something.
Yeah.
In fact, you're interested in their mission and purpose will really stand to you. And so you might have the same skill set as somebody else, exactly the same, and then you'll get the job because you've got the belief in what they're doing.
Yeah.
For you as well, Art, were you going to say something?
No, I was just going to say that. Another great example I wanted to share, because I think a lot of parents probably listening like, man, you know, really... This sounds good, Peyton. We believe in the technical trades, but at the end of the day, I really want my student to go to a 4-year university and have that safety net. Even if I pay for it, I want them to have that safety net. The thing is, students getting that experiential learning, no matter what the trade area is, can inform that decision of what they do at that 4-year university if they choose to go that route and make it so much more impactful. We had a student one time, she was a carpentry student. She loved carpentry, but she knew she wanted to be a framer for the rest of her life. She didn't want to build houses, but she loved the construction trades. We had a picnic table building contest at one of the local hardware stores, and a lot of industry folks had come out and tool representatives. And while her team was building the picnic table contest, one of the tool reps came up to her and said, "Hey, y'all are doing a great job here. Let me talk to you a little bit about our tool company." Well, at the end of the day, she ended up getting a job as a tool sales rep with that tool company in the construction trades. She wasn't necessarily framing houses anymore, but had it not been for that experience, she wouldn't have found exactly what you're talking about, a dance company, whatever it is, that passion that she had. And now she's working in sales for that company. So a lot of times it's a gateway to just let you know that there are, no matter what job that company performs, there are opportunities to get involved in that company at every level, from the technical skilled worker that's performing whatever the purposeful task of that company is, to HR management, to marketing, to communications, to IT support. All of those jobs exist, and you can find a company that fits that interest that you have.
Yeah. So how do you find, as a learner, how do you find the balance between confidence and humility?
Yeah.
A difficult one.
Yeah, that's when you get really good at something, it's easy for confidence to start taking over that humility. But I think the key for me is, and I think the key I see in a lot of students in the trades, is that you have to go in with the mindset that you're going to be a continual learner. You know, technology develops at a rapid pace. If you go into the technology industry confident that you know everything, and in about 2 hours, you're not going to know everything anymore, right?
Yeah.
So if you go in and don't have that humility that you have to be a continual learner, that you have to constantly be investing in yourself and in your craft, then that you're going to get behind, and you're going to go from being really confident to unemployed pretty quickly. And surprisingly enough, it's like that in a lot of the trades. Electrical codes get updated, plumbing codes, building codes. It's a continual process to stay sharp. And just look at the innovation that's happening in the construction industry right now. I know in some places in Europe, industrial hemp is being used as a construction fiber for insulation, for concrete. It's a new way that's reducing harmful inputs into people's bodies and finding a more natural way to create building materials that are rigid and strong and stout. That's not really happening in the U.S. right now. There's some conversation of it, but in the near future, I see that as being one of the next generation eco-friendly developments in the construction industry here that's taking place in other parts of the world. And if you're going to stay up with the market, if you're going to be in demand as a builder, you're going to need to learn how to work with those materials. You're going to need to make sure all of your employees have the skill sets to be able to install and build correctly with those items. And that's just a simple example, but innovations like that are happening on a daily basis. And if you don't stay current with it, you're going to find yourself without opportunity pretty quickly.
So it's that adaptability as well that they talk about in evolution. Pretty much it plays out in the workforce, I think, because you're always adapting to some new trend or new thing. I think it comes back to what you're talking about, the principles behind something, so you don't have to look so much at the detail of the new stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. And I really, in that case, overconfidence definitely leads to humility, because if you're overconfident and think the way you've always done things is going to work forever, it's pretty humbling when you realize you don't have any work to do forever. So.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So do you have any favorite book, Peyton?
Yeah, I tell you what, there's a series that a gentleman by the name of Tim Elmore put out. It's called the Habitudes series. And combined habits and attitude.
Okay.
Yeah. So we think about, so we have these habits that we get into. Some are positive, some are negative, but how do we develop these positive habits and attitudes that really move us forward in life? I give you an example. One of my favorite one, and it's not a cohesive cover to cover book. What it is it's got short little segments of these habitudes, he calls them, that I think when we talk about the psychological impact and making sure we're in the right mindset and frame of mind moving into whatever it is, These really help start turning the gears to get you in that process. So it's a series of these little parables, I would say, that crave that thought. One of my favorite ones is the starving baker. So I'll just give you a brief synopsis of it. There was this guy who opened up his own bakery. He was really good, really talented. And the first day he opened up his bakery, he had 5 or 10 people, you know, waiting in line, wanted to come in, try it out. Well, his desserts and his goods were delicious. So the next day, the line got longer and then longer and then longer. Pretty soon, it's wrapped around the corner. And people keep coming back to this guy every day, and they start to notice that over time, you know, he was, you know, a nice, fit, you know, healthy looking person on day one. But after a few weeks, his cheekbones are showing, his face is sunk in, he's skinny, he's got bags under his eyes, he's so tired. What had happened was he had been working so hard to provide this quality food, this quality product for everyone else that was coming into his shop. He was literally giving all of this food away to people as they were coming in. He never took the time to stop and feed himself. So he was a baker able to make incredible foods who was essentially starving himself and not eating himself because he was working so hard. And the moral of that story is we may not be physically starving ourselves, but in any leadership role, in any capacity that we're serving in any job, we've got to take the time to step back and feed ourselves so that we stay healthy in 100% capacity doing whatever it is we do. And that goes back to what we were just talking about, continuing education, taking the time to get what you need to be able to do your job better, to feel confident in your job, to feel confident in your abilities, taking the time you need to push the reset button sometimes and just take care of yourself. And that's something that, you know, I knew I was bad for not doing, because there's tasks you got to get done. You just work at a breakneck speed to try to get it all done as fast as you can and as best as you can. And at the end of the day, you realized, man, I haven't read a book in 2 years. I'm missing out on an opportunity to grow myself, to expand my knowledge. And when you have that moment of realization, it's like, man, when my industry is dependent on me being connected with what's current, what's relevant, what's happening, and I'm not making the time to feed my brain, I'm missing out on an opportunity to do my job even better. So, you know, he's just got a ton of those. I think he's got about 5 or 6 of those books that are just loaded with awesome little anecdotes like that, that are short reads that just help you reset your mind and refocus. And it's been a pleasure to dive into some of those.
Sounds interesting. I like those kind of ones where you can kind of just come back to it, read a chapter, come back again. So it's not just one read.
Yeah.
I guess my last question for you is, what does success look like to you now?
Yeah. What does success look like? Man, that's a great question, Dennis. And I have to say, for me, success is about balance. For a long time, I thought success came with titles and job opportunities and showing that forward progression in whatever field that you're in. And while, you know, that is a component of it, if you want to be considered successful in your field, you should always be looking for, what's this next step? What's my next ability to have a greater impact in this industry? But to me, success is really about balance. And it comes back to that starving baker mentality, because if I'm so focused on the portion of success that is just that upward movement in whatever industry or whatever company it may be, and I don't take the time to balance my life, to do things outside of work that I also enjoy, then I'd find myself, with a wonderful family that I would never see. I'd find myself with a home that my dad and I worked so hard to build that I'm so proud of that I never spend any time in. The day you've that balance between being successful in a career and deciding what success looks like for you outside of that. Sometimes the two are really closely intertwined, but developing that balance is incredibly important. And if you don't have balance, I find it very difficult to have continued success. I've had a lot of friends who have burned out in whatever industry it is because they went so hard at that upward movement in whatever company it was, and then they just don't have any gas left in the tank. It comes right back to the starving baker. They didn't create balance in their life and take care of what they needed for them along the way.
Sounds good. So if anybody listening, how would they get in contact with you? How would they learn more about Skills USA? You mentioned there's one in the UK as well, Skills UK, I think as well.
Yeah, so there's a ton of countries that have a skills association that works with the technical and skilled trades. Most countries, the USA is a little bit different in that we focus on that employability and leadership development in addition to the skill sets, whereas several countries just focus solely on that technical skill piece. But if you visit worldskills.org, the next World Skills Competition is actually going to be held in 2019 in Kazan, Russia. Okay. So it's coming up. Folks over in that neck of the woods can go and check it out. There'll be about 90 countries competing and over 60 contests. You'll get to see some of the best that the world has to offer in the technical skill trades. So that's worldskills.org if you wanted to check that out and find out if there's a skill-related association in your country. If you want to get in touch with me, SkillsUSA NC stands for North Carolina. SkillsUSANC.org is our North Carolina website, or SkillsUSA.org is our national website. Also, PeytonHolland.com. In addition to what I do in SkillsUSA, I spend a lot of time working with companies, working on how we close that skills gap, how we develop the next generation of the labor force, working with students, preparing them for whatever that next step for them is in the workforce and life and their career. And so you can check me out, PeytonHolland.com, or just Google Peyton Holland and TEDx, and you'll get to hear the condensed version of some of what we talked about today.
Yeah, you should check out the TEDx talk. That was how I first got, or that's what first attracted me to you. That's I just saw your TEDx talk, and it really made sense to me. And that's actually the base of a lot of the questions I asked you today. It's just stuff you came out with. So yeah, so thanks for taking the time, Peyton, for sharing the knowledge today, and best of luck with everything with Skills USA and World Skills.
Yeah, thank you, Dennis. I appreciate it. Look forward to talking with you again soon.
Cool. So until next time, have fun and enjoy the process.